There are times during surgery when you discover a way to make things easier or more efficient. Sometimes there are through our own quicksand moments. Others are surgical gems gifted to us by our mentors and peers. This is OQC Eureka Moments with Drs. Nicole Fram and Elizabeth Yu, where we learn how to pivot, reflect, and evolve as surgeons.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Ophthalmology Quicksand Chronicles, Eureka Moments. We are your hosts. I'm Dr. Nicole Fram, and I want to introduce the amazing, brilliant Madam President of ASCRS.
Hi, Elizabeth Yu. We are, again, so excited that you guys are opening your computers, digital devices, ears to allow us to continue with season three. As you know, this season, we pivoted away from the quicksand, kind of from the really hard moments, and we have shortened it to really highlight those clinical surgical gems and pearls that run through our heads, combined from what we've learned from our mentors, what we've seen, what we've learned from our own sticky quicksand moments that have really shaped our own techniques and have helped create these Eureka moments. And so Nicole and I are so excited to be here with you today.
You know, Liz, I just think it's really important that we share these gems, these surgical gems, this surgical gold, and make sure that everyone who's watching understands that there are moments in surgery that are just going to make you better, and we're going to share them with you today. So as a reminder, this season will be available through video and audio podcasts, so you can listen on your favorite platform, and we're back on YouTube, so watch us on YouTube. But at the end of the podcast, please, please, please fill out the survey. We want to know if we're doing it right, if you want to see different things, if it's too short, if it's too long. We just want to know how you feel about the podcast and make sure you're getting all the education possible to make this podcast educational for all of our viewers. So Liz, do you know who our guest is today?
I did have a little bit of insight, and today, great episode because there are so many amazing Eureka moments or like fireworks, which is so apropos because we're coming up on July 4th.
That was good. That was good. No, usually we have, you know, one Eureka moment in a video. This video literally has a million Eureka moments. Now, I know that everyone's like, okay, come on. I really want to know who it is. Well, this guest is, do we have to do it? Liz, you do it. Dr. Steve Safran. He is literally a surgical genius. He's board certified, fellowship trained cornea specialist. He received his medical degree from SUNY Downstate Medical Center College of medicine, and has been in practice for more than 20. I think it's more like more than 30 years. He's currently on staff at Capital Health System, New Jersey Surgery Center, and Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital in Hamilton. His special interest is in cataract surgery, complex cataract surgery, and premium lenses. He's extremely knowledgeable. He's so generous with sharing his videos on YouTube, sharing his pearls at all of these meetings, but particularly in the area of complicated cataract surgery. Dr. Safran operates in a state-of-the-art facility and is always pushing the field forward with the latest technological advances and innovations in eye disease. He has an experience in anterior segment and anterior segment reconstruction, but he's also a cornea specialist. So he can just do basically anything in the front of the eye. And he's also an experienced refractive LASIK surgeon. Dr. Safran is such a well-known and so appreciated lecturer on premium lenses and complex cataract surgery. And he's a proud member of AAO and ASCRS. Steve, please turn on your camera and share with us your incredible Eureka moments today.
Oh, wow. That was a great introduction. That's really fantastic. It's so nice to be here with you guys. You're so good at what you do. You're such great surgeons and such professionals at presenting and doing this kind of thing. I watch your episodes in the past and I say, boy, that's a really fantastic program that you have. So I'm very happy to be here. I'm very grateful. So I'm just going to jump right in here. So, you know, I get sent a lot of lens exchange patients are referred to me for lens exchanges, and I've done hundreds and hundreds of these and picked up some tricks over the years. And I thought I'd share some of the techniques that I'm using for some of these tough cases. This is a 60-year-old. She's referred from about 5 hours away. And you can see she's got a Panoptix Toric T4 placed over a year ago, 20 millimeter eye, a tiny little eye. She has a history of narrow angle glaucoma. She dilates really poorly. She's got weak zonules. She's got capsular phimosis, a little mild microphagocytosis. You can see all that lens is really socked in. The rexus is socked down. She got form fused keratoconus. So she really needs a toric lens. I can't, you know, do LRIs here with that funny cornea. And here you can see the calculation. She really does. She has a toric lens and needs a toric lens. And I've already actually exchanged her other eye a few months earlier, the right eye. This is what the right eye looked like. And that went pretty well. It looked like this. You can see I was able to put a toric lens in. Now she wants the second eye done. Sometimes it's harder to hit a second good shot when you've already hit one good shot. And this eye's a little tougher on every level. You know, this eye is a shorter axial length, narrow angle glaucoma, even smaller rectus opening. So everything's just a little bit tougher. Let's cut right to the video here. So this is what it looks like under the microscope. And the first thing I'm going to do is put iris retractors in so I get the lay of the land and see what I'm doing. Now, when I make my incision, I'm going to make a fairly long self-sealing incision so I don't have to worry about iris prolapse. Now, to reopen the capsular bag, this is a 26-gauge LASIK cannula. It has a flat spatulated tip. And this has been one of the most useful techniques I've had. I came up with this about 15 years ago, and I've used it on just about every lens exchange. So I start with dispersive and then switch to cohesive viscoelastic because the cohesive will give a better wave of dissection. And I'm actually now just reopening the capsular bag. Now what I'm going to do is take my iris retractors and move them onto the anterior capsule rim. But as I do this, you can see the iris is prolapsing through the paracentesis because it's a floppy iris and there's just a lot of posterior pressure in this tiny little eye. So I'm noticing the iris coming out. Now, if you look at this, you say, oh, that's a radial tear. Well, it's not. When you stretch the anterior capsule and there's fibrosis, you can actually get a split in the fibrosis, but it's not a radial tear. So this technique is haptic stripping, where you grab the haptic and strip the fibrosis off. The other side is pretty socked in, so I'm just going to leave that for later. And what I want to do now is, because this lens is big and the opening is small, I'm going to cut the lens within the capsular bag so I can take it out in two pieces and not put stress on the capsular bag. But you can see here there's a lot of posterior pressure, so just getting in with my forceps is tricky. The iris is in my way, so I actually have to use the scissor to push the iris out of my way. Now I'm going to cut the lens within the bag. You see I'm turning the scissor sideways, so I'm just sort of sneaking in and I'm not opening the blade a lot where I would nip the capsule. But as I do this, the bag is collapsing. You can see the iris, everything's sort of breathing because it's all this posterior pressure. So I'm putting dispersive viscoelastic under the lens to kind of, you know, give myself a little working space so I can go in and complete cutting the lens. So now I get through this, I'm turning the scissor sideways. I was able to get through the lens without damaging the anterior posterior capsule. So now I've already freed up this haptic. I'm able to take this half of the lens out. And as I do this, you'll see I'm protecting the back of the cornea with a Sinsky hook so it doesn't kick up, the haptic doesn't kick up and damage the endothelium. Now here you see I'm cutting the haptic because it's going to be much easier to extricate that haptic when I've gotten this optic out of the way. So now the optic's out, the only thing that's remaining is this haptic. And it's very easy for me to grab it and strip the fibrosis off using the Sinsky hook. And this is a technique I really like, this haptic stripping technique. Now I'm going to inject the CTR, but you'll notice as I start to inject, I see this line in the posterior capsule. And what I've learned is that if you just keep injecting, you're going to probably poke right through the posterior capsule. When you see that, that capsule is floppy, and it means you probably imbricated the bit of the peripheral capsule. So I'm going to flip it over, go the other way, and the CTR is now, I think, in the equator of the bag. I'm going to use a hook to retract the iris, but I've decided, you know, before I go any further, I want to really see what's going on. So I'm going to take my iris retractors and put them back on the iris so I can see everything. So now I'm inflating the capsule a bit, but you can see even when I inflate it, you have these wrinkles in the posterior capsule. And that's because there's a lot of posterior pressure here on this tiny little eye. The iris is starting to come out again through the paracentesis, and I'm pumping it up so I can put a lens in, but now the iris is prolapsing through the incision, even though it was a well-made incision. So what I'm going to do is make a stair behind my incision and add a fifth iris retractor coming behind my clear cornea incision to hold the iris back out of my way. And so now I'm trying to figure out what to do. I'm just going to give mannitol and wait and wait and wait. And while I'm waiting, I take my iris retractor and put them back on the anterior capsule rim. So that's going to stretch it and it's going to support the capsular bag while I inject the lens. So I've waited. I think I have a little bit, you know, the mannitol's kicked in. I think I've got room. I'm going to go ahead and bite the bullet, hold my breath, inject the toric lens, rotate it onto the correct axis, hope there's no fibrosis that's going to inhibit me, take out my iris retractors, remove the viscoelastic, and the case, fortunately, is completed. The next day, she looked like this, day one post-op. Her refraction was excellent. She had a very happy outcome. She's over a year out now, and the lens is stable, and it looks good. So thank you for letting me show this.
Steve, this is a real great case. Liz, why don't you start us off and talk about, you know, the eureka moment in this case, or the one, two, or three that you felt was like, just, I'm going to do that tomorrow in surgery. I'm so relieved that I learned this today.
There are so many great eureka moments to talk about, but things that any surgeon can take home, especially when we're doing IOL exchanges, which if you're doing refractive cataract surgery or cataract surgery enough that the patient has persistent negative dysphotopsia or, you know, any reason that they're going to need an exchange, these are things that we need to know. But the two things I loved, that number one, the fact that if you have a small pupil and if you use the iris hooks in order to expand the pupil and then you reusing the same hooks to help to re-expand the actual fibrotic rexus, that is beautiful. Because on a primary rexus, using iris hook, not ideal. Okay, because the iris hooks themselves, the primary rexus is too thin, and it can oftentimes not be enough to actually hold it, and it can actually cause an anterior capsule compromise, not postoperatively, especially after weeks have gone by when there's fibrosis in. You saw how strong that actual anterior capsule becomes, and it can actually withstand a ton of tension that is placed on it, but it allows you to have much more stability. Plus, it expands the actual diameter of your working area. So the multifunctional use from going with the iris hooks, then utilizing that to help to stabilize the pseudophakodynesis and increase the diameter of your opening work area in the capsular bag, that is beautiful. And then two, I love that device of utilizing the actual LASIK 26 diameter, gauge cannula, which, because I usually bevel down 27 gauge needle, and I am fine in terms of reopening the bag. And then there are different kind of instruments specifically that you can use. Donenfeld has one. I think, Nicole, you were talking about actually making a framulator.
So Kathy McCabe has a McCaber. And then there's a Pele that Zaina Elmoks and Doug Koch like to use. And then there's the Framula, which is a combination of Donenfeld and kind of this 26 gauge. But I mean, this one works great. Is that cannula disposable?
No, that's a reusable cannula. It's actually a Katina K75106 is the number. And I started using it around 2000.
Say it again.
I started using that. It's Katina K75106. It's 26 gauge LASIK cannula. It's reusable. It's, I think, about $80 or so. I think I've got about 10 of them. So, but I think I did my first bag for bag exchange I don't know, 2006 or seven. And I wasn't doing as much LASIK as I used to. And I was looking at the cannula and I said, you know, I can inject viscoelastic through this. This might be a nice way to sneak under the anterior capsule rim without, you know, without having to, you know, worry there's about puncturing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you have a needle, you can go right through, you shove through and you're injecting into the vitreous. You don't even realize you've gone through. So I think I used this the first time, like 2006 or seven, and presented it at Toronto at Ike's meeting in Toronto in 2009. And I still get a lot of phone calls from people. Hey, you know, what's that cannula you use? I saw it on YouTube, but it looks pretty neat. Yeah. And this thing, you can pretty much get under any anterior capsule rim, and you don't have to worry about puncturing. It's flat. It's like a duck, like spatulated. Mm-hmm. The only thing is they can get clogged, so you have to clean them out good at the end of the case.
If well, they that's get clogged, yeah. Then, you know. That's the thing is TAS, and I mean, so whatever cannula. I mean, the Pele is disposable, but you have to really like squirt a lot of BSS through it and have your techs really pay attention to how they process it because of TAS. So I was just thinking about, you know, we're using so many premium lenses these days and everyone's doing it, you know, because the technology is getting better and better. Now you're using your iris hooks. Have you ever used capsule retractors? I've been using that more and more. I know it's expensive, but the MST chain capsule retractors, if there's areas that are less fibrotic than others, you can use those so that you have your bimanual approach to removing the haptics and stripping. Have you done that?
Yeah, I mean, I use capsule retractors for cataract surgery all the time. But for lens exchange, I don't like them because they get in the way. They're big, they're clunky. And, you know, the problem is that they get in your way. You get the lens in, you have trouble taking them out. I just feel that, you know, one of the things sometimes I was going to show a video where I use iris retractors to assist in optic capture. So basically, I have the iris retractors holding the capsule open, and I inject the lens so the haptic lands on top of the anterior capsule and the lens unfolds behind the iris retractors already in the optic capture configuration. And then I just have to tuck the second haptic from the sulcus from the incision into the sulcus. And, you know, you can't do that kind of stuff with capsule retractor. Sometimes I have cases where what I do is I go through the sulcus and I turn the hooks upside down to retract the iris, and then rotate them the other way to retract the capsule or the anterior capsule. So the thing is that with the iris hooks, you can expand the anterior capsule opening better if you're dealing with phimosis. And, you know, you don't really need that same support in the equator of the bag, with the cataract surgery.
I put it in right as I'm just trying to dissect the haptic tunnel, the fibrosis around the haptic. So I don't leave it in the whole time. I put it in right there and then I can really just get that bimanual approach, but you can do it with iris hook. Do you know what also helps with phimosis, Steve?
You could have used
a poor guy, laser.
I'm a poor guy.
Sorry,
I'm using my LASIK cannulas, man. I can't afford a laser.
I told Liz I was going to get you on that one. Like the one place Steve Safran may use a laser.
Well, but this lady has a small pupil. I mean, a lot of the cases like these, you know, where the rectus is small. The reason the rectus is small is because the pupil didn't dilate well, and they made a small rectus, so they didn't clean up the cortex well. So they get phimosis in these cases. So, you know, I have had very good success doing what you saw here. You know, even with really bad phimosis, you can usually pull it open with iris retractors. And when you do that, you'll actually see the fibrosis split, but the anterior capsule remains intact. If the patient had femtosecond cataract surgery, though, and you do this, you're more likely to get a radial tear. And I've got a lot of videos where you see that, you pull, and you actually, the thing just falls apart. So, you know, I before I pull really hard on the anti-caps, I like to know, was it, you know, a manual capsulotomy or a femtosecond laser? Because laser giveth and it taketh away. And, you know, if you're going to use the femto laser to make the rectus, and then there's a lot of phimosis, I found the stretching technique, you can get a radial tear, but I've never seen that happen with a manual rectus.
And then the last thing that I was thinking about is, you know, before you put your CTR in, a lot of times I like to really dissect out to the equator. I'll take a spatula and make sure everything's open so that I'm not worried about, you know, not having the bag fully expanded, especially when we're putting in a toric or something like that. So do you now make sure that you're opening the capsule all the way to the equator before putting the CTR?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really important, especially when you're doing, some lenses, like this is an important point. With the Alcon lenses, the fibrosis is at the tip of the haptic, at the terminal end of the haptic. But with the J&J lenses, the fibrosis occurs at the proximal haptic at the notch. So when you remove an Alcon lens, typically you don't get a fibrotic tunnel. But when you move a J&J lens, you can dissect that lens out, and then there's a fibrotic tunnel. And that tunnel will get in the way of placing a new toric lens. And so in those cases, there's two things you can do. And this is another eureka moment. One is that if you're going on the same axis, you can tuck the lens in backwards and actually insert it in the fibrotic tunnel. So I've done that in many cases where a patient has, let's say, a multifocal toric and they want a monofocal toric on the same axis. There's a fibrotic tunnel there. I dissect the haptic out of the tunnel, and then I go in backwards and just tuck the new haptic in from the other side, like I'm inserting a key into a lock. The other thing you can do is just cut the thing. You know, you just cut the tunnel. So what you have to do is put the lens in, push down, and then come under the anterior capsule with a retina micro scissor, and you can just sort of cut the tunnel open. But, you know, these are pretty advanced and difficult, tricky techniques. If you sweep, you'll know you have fibrosis, but you won't break the fibrosis. To break the fibrosis, you're going to need, I usually like to use a 23 gauge micro scissor, and you need really good visualization. So in this case, you know, I did sweep with the cannula that I was injecting viscoelastic. I did not feel any fibrosis at all, but you could have a little peripheral, a little tiny fibrosis you're not aware of. And as you're injecting the CTR, it kind of gets caught in that, the head of it, and it imbricates and it starts gathering up the posterior capsule, and you get stress and stria line. And the couple of things you can do is, one, you can use a technique, I've seen you do this, where you hold one eyelet, inject, and drop it in. The other thing you can do is you can use a Malugan modified capsule tension ring, which has a little pigtail on the end that's used for suturing. If you inject that, it won't get stuck in the fibrosis. It doesn't get caught in anything. It just rolls over it. It's like a steamroller because it's curled.
Yeah, that's great.
So the first thing that I would do too, also just for any listeners, if you are putting a secondary CTR in, and it's going to be more common if you're one, experiencing posterior pressure, or two, if it is a bag that is already fibrosed in somewhat, so like in an IOL exchange, for example, the first thing I would do is obviously slow down, stop, reinflating the bag gently with a little more viscoelastic just to make sure that everything is nicely open. And then even considering going in the opposite direction, of course, and then you can try to, because the bag has such great depth to it, try to inject it or insert it maybe a little bit more anterior to where you were at, still within the equator space, directionally, and then obviously just kind of in that same guidance slowly, just to ensure that you don't hit the same area of potential fibrosis that can occur. But those kind of tricks too can help. So the reinflation of the bag, I think, is always another consideration, just, you know, a nice great pearl to make sure that we don't run into any of those other areas of fibrosis that can occur along the way anytime you are inserting a CTR in a non-naive bag, or even in any scenario where you might feel resistance or see the striae occurring.
Yeah, Liz.
Yeah, I mean, it's like walking on ice. You know, you hear it's cracking and you start thinking, maybe I should stop, step forward, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, there's a lot of things here in this video where, you know, I say, well, maybe I should, you know, back off a little bit here. You know, one of them is when you're pulling a haptic out, you know, you don't just yank on it. You know, you strip it. And even like in this video, you saw I stripped the first haptic, the second haptic, it was fibrosis. And I said, well, I'm not going to play with that now. I'll play with that later when I've gotten some of the junk out of the bag and I have better access to it. I can get a better feel, better tension, tactile feel for what's going on. And the other is injecting the CTR. You know, you see that there's something funny happening. If you keep injecting, you're going to disinsert the bag or end up poking right through it. You have to have a sense of when to stop and say, you know what, I've got to stop here and try something else.
Right. There's approaches where you can do bimanual. You can put it in manually. Sometimes you get more tactile feedback when you do it that way.
But one thing I'm going to emphasize is that if you are, let's say, through the case, it's not that much, whatever, but you're starting to pull on the haptic and you're seeing that the zonules are kind of shoddy and you're starting to induce a dialysis, that's a really good time to put iris retractors in to support the anterior capsule or capsule retractors and sort of give you some counter traction. Mm-hmm. So what I like to do is I'll amputate the haptic, get the optic out, and then gently kind of tease and twirl that as I pull and dissect the fibrosis out. And if I need an assist from, you know, an iris retractor to give me counter traction, then so be it.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you so much. I mean, this was certainly a wonderful smorgasbord of great eureka moments. I think that is one of the most elegant ways that I've seen of being able to strip fibrosis off of any haptic, particularly when you're not able to see the fibrosis, but also save the zonules at the same time because of the way you are able to kind of counter strip and keep the bag back. So that is, I think, a great way to end our episode with Dr. Saffron. We just really appreciate you all listening to this episode of OQC Eureka Moments. We hope that sharing these techniques with you, with Dr. Steve Saffron, Nicole, and myself, will help to speed the learning curve and pass down these gems that have been gifted to us by our mentors, including Steve.
So please remember to email quicksandchronicles@ascrs.org with any questions, feedback, comments. We can take it. Just give it to us. And don't forget to fill out the survey below. And remember, every time you think you have the eyeball figured out, it's going to humble you.
And that is okay, because these are all these learning experiences, and we are taking care of our patients as best as we can. And we hope that these collective experiences will help us all develop that grace under pressure. Thank you all, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of OQC Eureka Moments with Drs. Nicole Fram and Elizabeth Yu. Hindsight really is 2020.